With more and more states reopening their economies, contact tracing is expected to play a critical role in slowing the spread of COVID-19. But tracking down people who have been exposed to the coronavirus, which is a key element of contact tracing, is proving to be a challenge. Crystal Watson is a senior scholar at the Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security and an assistant professor at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. And I asked her to remind us exactly how contact tracing works.
What happens is someone has a positive test for coronavirus. The public health department, a contact tracer, will get in touch with them, ask them how they're doing, ask what resources they need, if they need connection to healthcare, for example, and then also ask who they may have been around during the time that they have been infectious, which could be about 2 days before they develop symptoms up until the time that they isolated themselves. And so then the contact tracer will get in touch with those contacts. And by close contact, we mean within 6 feet for more than 15 minutes is the kind of the standard that's being used. And ask those close contacts to quarantine at home for 14 days. And if contacts do that and follow that guidance, and if they are indeed infected, then they won't be out in the community spreading the virus to others. And the chain of transmission ends with them.
Crystal, this sounds very efficient, or I don't know if it sounds efficient, but it definitely sounds like a way to prevent the spread, but it doesn't sound like something that's easy to do. Is that right?
Contact tracing, it is a pretty straightforward idea, but in practice, it's pretty difficult. So you have to get someone on the phone, have them answer the phone, and that's pretty difficult these days. I know I don't answer my phone when it's an unknown number most of the time because of all the spam calls that we get. So that's a tough ask even to get somebody to pick up.
Then after that, you're really looking for them to divulge information.
Yeah, so the contact tracer will ask questions about how they're doing, their health status, and then also if it's a case, they ask about their close contacts, and if it's a contact, ask about their activities and ask them to stay at home. And that's also a big ask to ask someone to quarantine for 14 days.
Are we using different kinds of contact tracing depending on which state we're talking about?
So the basics of contact tracing is pretty universal. There are also contact tracing digital tools that could be employed. They're not being employed widely in the U.S. yet, but they have been used in other parts of the world.
Remind us again, Crystal, who is implementing contact tracing here in the United States? Is it from the federal government? Are these state efforts or city efforts?
So right now, it's really a combination of state and local contact tracing efforts. So funding has come down from the federal government as well as some guidance from the CDC to help with state and local contact tracing, but it's being done on the ground and led by state and local health departments.
I know in New York City and New York State at the peak of the pandemic, our state and local officials were hiring many, many contact tracers. How do we know whether those efforts have been successful?
There are a number of ways to understand how effective contact tracing is. First of all, it's the number of contact tracers that have been hired. That's a pretty easy number to get at. But then we also want to know about effectiveness of the contact tracing itself. And so there are some indicators that show us how effective that is. And that could be the number of cases that are coming out of quarantine as opposed to from individuals who are not in quarantine. We want that number to be high because if cases arise from people in quarantine, we know they haven't been out in the community spreading it to others. Or the number of new cases that are linked to other known cases epidemiologically. And we also want that number to be high because then we can be more confident that there's not a large pool of unrecognized spread in our communities.
I want to talk a little bit about who has access to the information. So say that you're a contact tracer and you've located someone who'd been in contact with someone who's infected with the virus or has the virus. What do you do with that information?
The data is collected by contact tracers on individuals. That data is used to support those individuals and keep up with them, make sure they're doing okay in quarantine or isolation, connect them with resources, provide them with packages so they can stay at home. But it can also be aggregated up and de-identified and used for disease surveillance at a higher level. But ultimately, the information stays with public health. It's not transmitted to any other government agencies or any companies, and individuals should be confident that their identities will be protected. They won't be revealed to other people.
Well, let's talk a little bit about digital contact tracing, because we know that some folks that have cell phones had suddenly experienced updates to their phones that include some sort of coronavirus contact tracing application. What is the role of tech companies like Google and Apple? Have they been involved, and to what extent?
Yeah, in the US and actually around the world, Google and Apple have basically set a standard for digital contact tracing, and it's not even really digital contact tracing. They're calling it exposure notification. So this means that they have put together an approach on their platforms called an API, where public health agencies can develop applications to go on those platforms that will enable individuals who test positive to report that to the app and then also notify any potential contacts who have been in close contact with them during the time they've been infectious. And they use Bluetooth low energy as a way to do this and do this in a very privacy preserving way.
Crystal, you said the magic word privacy, and I think that no matter, Crystal, what you tell some folks, there is a hesitation for big government or big tech, frankly, to get their hands on such a personal piece of information. Are privacy concerns something that contact tracers are aware of and how they might affect their ability to collect data?
Contact tracers are very aware of privacy concerns. Contact tracing isn't something new for public health. They are very practiced at keeping this information private and safeguarding it, but they're also very aware of the public's concern around this. And so part of public health's responsibility is to provide messaging to the public to help them understand how their data is being protected.
And if you could give us a sense of a place that you think is doing it well, because we've been hearing mixed reports on the efficacy of contact tracing so far. I don't know if it's because this is a relatively new thing. I don't know if it's because folks, like we said earlier, may not be picking up the phone, or there just may be privacy concerns. But are there any places that you're seeing that are doing it well, and any places that you're seeing that are not doing it well?
We do have some great examples in the U.S., starting with Massachusetts. They were the first to really scale up their workforce, and they've achieved a lot of success. New York and New York City in particular, New York City just stood up its contact tracing effort at the beginning of June. And so we're just starting to see metrics come out of that. And I have to say that both of these locations are being very transparent in their metrics, which is really great because it helps other people learn about their programs and what they're doing well and what needs improvement. So some of the early data may be a little discouraging, but it's getting better.
I wanted to drill down a little bit more on populations that may be more hesitant to engage with contact tracing because of the current climate. You may have immigrants who have coronavirus who are afraid of any government intervention because it could affect their citizenship status. You have Black Americans in particular who have a history of surveillance in the United States and distrust of medical establishments. And then you have the elderly who may just not have the technology. So given those three limitations with those three populations, of course, not generalizing here, how do contact tracers sort of get past those barriers?
They do pose a challenge here, and these are very legitimate reasons that people may not want to engage. But I think one approach that public health is taking to overcome those barriers is really to hire contact tracers and train them from the communities that they want to protect. And so if you get on the phone with someone from your community who speaks your language, who understands your circumstance, I think people are much more likely to be trusting and to engage. And so that is one critical piece of contact tracing that I think every location should be mindful of.
And for those who are concerned about maintaining their privacy, is there anything that they should be mindful of, any protections that they can take to make sure that those concerns are alleviated?
Yeah, I think it's valid, first of all, to confirm the identity of the person who's on the phone. I know there have been some instances of fraud with contact tracing. So asking for verification of that identity is important. And then also, I think it's valid to ask your contact tracer what they are specifically doing to protect your information.
Crystal, where do we see contact tracing going as cases increase across the country?
The idea from the beginning of the pandemic, when we had these population-level stay-at-home orders and other social distancing measures, was to flatten the curve and get cases down to a manageable level. That was the purpose of that. And then during that time, the idea was to build up testing and contact tracing capacity to be able to manage the pandemic in an ongoing way. Some locations have been able to do that, others have not. And so in places where we're seeing really large spikes in cases, contact tracing is still really critical. It should be a centerpiece of our response, but it may not be enough. It may be that we need to go back to flattening that curve again. And while that's really unfortunate, it really illustrates why we should be building up contact tracing capacity, both for now and for later in the fall. We may see additional spikes in cases as well as seasonal influenza.
Crystal Watson is a senior scholar at the Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security and assistant professor at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. Crystal, thanks for joining us.
Thanks very much.
And we'd love to hear from you. Has a contact tracer reached out to you, or are you yourself a contact tracer? Tell us about your experience by calling us at 877-869-8253. That's 877-8-MY-TAKE.